have a particularly large population until a group of proprietors, and they were basically ship owners and traders and merchants from Nantucket,
came to Hudson because they had suffered greatly during the American Revolution. Nantucket, being an island, was too susceptible to being blockaded by the British. So in their concerns, they looked for an inland port, and they found it at Hudson, because at that time we had two harbors, South Bay and North Bay. And South Bay, of course, is the one we drive over as we go to Mount Marino. So that was the one that was filled in for the railroad. Everybody thinks of Hudson as a whaling town. Seth Jenkins and Thomas Jenkins, who were Quakers from Nantucket, who first came to establish Hudson, were not in the whaling trade. They were simply in the shipping trade. Whaling does come just because of the technology of ships. We go to the clipper ship, which can go farther. My students always think that the whales were somehow near the Hudson River, or that the whales were brought to Hudson. I'm like, no, they did it out at sea in the Pacific and then brought the oil back to Hudson. But because of that, we were a trading city, a commerce city. By 1787, we have 19 inns and taverns in a city that's incorporated a year before, in 1787. So that tells you how quickly and how transient the population was. The first part of Hudson is down in what are the first and second wards today. So all of Hudson's history begins down by the river and then moves up. So the two big groups you have in the beginning are the Quakers, but you also have the Dutch that were there from the Clawbrook landing days. So these two are the first kind of groups that blend. So what happens to Hudson to bring in all this 19th century immigration? And it's because we go from a trading center to a manufacturing center. The trade in Hudson gets severely hurt in 1803 with the Embargo Act. So as I tell my kids, Hudson is not the capital of New York State today because Thomas Jefferson had an embargo. The embargo meant that we were not allowed to trade with either France or England. It was a way to keep America out of the conflicts with Napoleon. The result is Hudson's economy goes down. And then it starts to change. And the manufacturing that comes into Hudson is going to be primarily brickyard work and cement, as well as textiles. And those would be the three major components. Washburn's was the brickyard that was north in Hudson. Yeah. Textiles and iron. Iron is the other big one that we had here. Mostly because of the natural resources that go with it. The railroad is how the immigrants are going to get here. The first group of immigrants, the Irish, will come here initially to build the canal. But they will go immediately to Albany then to go off to build the canal. But when the railroad is put in 1850, most of the workers, or a large portion of them, are going to be Irish, and they're going to find their way to Hudson. So who are these workers? These guys, by the way, are brick workers. And that's the kilns in the back. Okay. First again, you're going to begin at those first and second wards. This is what's sort of interesting. The Dutch and the Quakers start there. They've moved uptown. So now that population is more near where the courthouse is today. So your immigrants will come in and they'll settle in these two areas initially. Okay. So the Irish. Like I said, the first of the Irish that come to Hudson come in the 1850s, so that's relatively early to come into the area. They will settle in the lower wards, like I said. St. Mary's, which is the first church, the very first one was actually down on Front Street. Okay, so the one we think of today is a much later church than was originally established. And that church was built in 1847, if you look at the city directory. So even before the railroad is in, there's enough of an Irish population to have a Catholic church here. They eventually move into non-manufacturing or railroad work. They build a lot of businesses. Hudson is a very entrepreneurial city, which we'll see with the modern immigrants today, that very quickly there are Irish restaurants, there's Irish taverns, and boarding houses that will start to go up. This is a postcard I found of St. Mary's from probably, this is the modern St. Mary's that we know today. As the railroad comes in, the Irish establish themselves, they move uptown. The second church that they're going to buy is today St. Michael's Ukrainian Church. That was originally a Unitarian church. Okay, so the Unitarians move out, the Catholics buy their building because it's bigger. And so they move then, and then eventually, when there's enough money and population, they build one at the Courthouse Square, which is the ultimate. They also build St. Mary's School. They have enough priests and nuns to fill the school at that point. By the turn of the century, by 1900, the police force, the police captain, and most of the officers are of Irish background. So, and so will be the fire chief, and by 1910, the mayor. The Irish in general, if you look at them as a population in America, tend to get into politics very quickly. And people always sort of wonder why. There's a two-part reason. Number one, the Irish come here speaking English. That gives you a big step up from later immigrant groups who don't speak English initially. And the second part is the Irish have been owned and controlled by the British for a long period of time. Although they weren't given the right to vote or to participate in government, they knew it existed, and they understood where the power would come. Other groups that will come later have no knowledge of democracy in any way, so it's a little harder for them maybe to understand its importance or to get involved. The big news is by 1870, you find Irish people buried in the cemetery locally, so that's when we know that they're really established. The second group that comes in, and actually timing sort of blends now. By the way, the Irish don't just stop coming like at 1860. It's a continual influx of Irish into the area, but the main core is here by 1900. The next group to come in are Italians. And the Italians that come to Hudson are coming predominantly for work, and the work they're coming for are brickmakers. What had happened was that brick becomes really valuable and important as you start to build New York City, because the big buildings down there are going to be built of brick. Just to the south, in the South Bay, below the South Bay, there's going to be a brickyard, and then the bigger one is at Newton Hook. Now, Newton Hook is actually Stockport-Stuyvesant, but the community there attaches itself mostly to Hudson, and they will send their children to Hudson for Sunday school and things of that nature. It's sort of interesting. The first brickyard workers were African Americans, and they were brought in from Virginia. Brickwork is from April to November. You can't get the kiln hot enough in the middle of winter, and you can't dig up any clay because the ground is frozen. So initially what's done is African Americans are brought here from Virginia. This is like 1880s, 1890s, they work the period of time that the brickyard is open, then they're sent back to Virginia for the winter. They're men only, they don't really bring their families up here in any large numbers. Eventually, as Italian workers, immigrants come into New York City, they find out that the brickyard work is available up here, they start to get recruited. They first work in brickyards lower part of the Hudson Valley, and then eventually come to Hudson. Now, they come with their families. So the brickyards actually build, the Newton Hook one had like tenements basically, but that were built up around there. And in November, they were laid off, just like the black workers were. Black workers were with them, by the way, they just went home. So what the Italians had to do is they had to find ways to make money to get them through the winter. So one of the big things they did is every family had a pig. And you usually butcher a pig at the end of November, and there would be just communal pig butchering and making of ham. In Hudson, it's a little different, is that they're going to work in the brickyards but live in the city. And again, they're going to live in the first and second wards initially. And they are still going to do the food piece, though, because if you look back, and that's sort of what I'm trying to show you, is back through there is a little hard. If you look even today, this is their church, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which I'll talk about in a minute. Most Italian families built their own little gardens in the back. They would be walled off, and they usually had a grape arbor back there. If you look at historically the way Italians lived in southern Italy, they were farmers, but they didn't live in individual farms. They lived in villages. And the villages would be walled off. You know, your individual house would be. And they would go down the hill to the fields during the day and then go back up to the villages at night. So that was kind of the communal living that they were used to. Most of the Italians that come here are going to come from Calabria and Naples. So one, a couple families find their way up here, and then they write home, and it's a connecting piece. So most of the initial families that came here were from similar villages, if not the same village in Italy. So it becomes a very tight-knit group when it comes here. They are very much entrepreneurs, and besides the brickyard work, they will, if you look at the city directories, there's going to be bars, there's going to be barbershops, which sounds very stereotypical, but there were several in Hudson, all owned by Italians. They will do stores, shoe shops, anything along those lines. They tended to really want to have their own businesses when they could. They will work the railroad. Railroad work means that you might work a strip of the railroad, meaning building it or repairing it, and then you might come home at the end of the week. The interesting story there is the first Italians who went to get jobs in the railroad were having difficulty because the Irish controlled the railroad. Most of the people who worked in the railroad were Irish. So this one family named Palatucci got a job in the railroad, and the manager, the foreman, said, "I can't pronounce your name." He said, "I'm going to call you Finn." And there's a whole bunch of people in Hudson today that are at least partially Italian, but their last name is F-I-N-N. But then there's also Finns in Hudson who are Irish by background. So one year I had two Finns in my classroom. One was actually Italian and one was actually Irish. So it's kind of interesting, you know. It's like, and when I told the one who's Italian, I said, "Are you really background Palatucci?" And he goes, "Yeah, how do you know that?" And I said, "Ah, secret." So I got him to pass my class, so that was pretty good. Politically, initially, the Italians are not as involved. Again, you've got the language barrier, number one. Number two, if you know the history of southern Italy, it just keeps getting taken over by various people. Okay, the French have it for a while, the Spanish have it in some parts. Then you have the King of Naples. You have Garibaldi attempting to unify it. But again, even in that unification, it's usually northern Italians controlling the government. So the southern Italians are kind of skeptical of politics, but surprisingly, in part maybe because it's a small city again, by 1918, the city marshal is an Italian, and so is the charity commissioner. Not too sure what the charity commissioner did. Must have been a nicer, sweeter time. They also quickly establish organizations for themselves. The first is Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Now, you might wonder why they had to have a Catholic church when there was already a Catholic church established at St. Mary's. And part of that is cultural. Each ethnic group dealt with the Catholicism in a slightly different way. The Irish had been Catholic in a Protestant-controlled area for 500 years, meaning that the Irish, you know, Ireland was Catholic, but England owned them. So on the surface, the Irish really tried to make their services, the mass was the same, but they wouldn't necessarily have as many festivals. They would do things inside the walls of the church because they were very suspicious of Protestants on the outside because of their experiences in Ireland. The Italians come over, then everybody in Italy pretty much is Italian, and so they don't have that same concept. They also have different festivals. So the biggest one is Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and in Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which is in July, the festival would be, let's say you broke your arm sometime during the year and you prayed to Our Lady of Mount Carmel and your arm was healed. Then during the festival, you would carry a wax arm through the streets in this festival and you would lay it at the church. Well, when they approached the Irish priest about this, it didn't go over very well. On top of that, the sermons are in English and these people speak Italian, so they don't understand the sermon. So at that point, they asked the bishop for an Italian language priest. They got one, and they built Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church. It is also interesting that although there was a Catholic church, school, it was mostly Irish children or Irish background children who initially went to it. Again, that goes back to their past.
The Irish were very, very suspicious of public education because in Ireland, public education meant that they were going to indoctrinate you to be Protestant, okay? Or their children weren't even allowed in. The Italians had never even heard of public education. This is Italy at 1900. They hadn't gotten that far. So the Italians pretty much went to the public school system in the city of Hudson. And then they would do religious education instead. So it's kind of a difference, so there's kind of a split there in the community both ways. The Italians will also establish charitable organizations, Sons of Italy, which is now the Sons and Daughters of Italy, Italian American Citizen Club, and the Italian American Republican Club. This is the other thing the Italians will do. If you have two sons in your family, you have one be a Democrat and one be a Republican. And that way you can get whatever you need. It was one way, particularly as you didn't know what the changing fluctuations of the politics of the city of Hudson would be. No comments about the present. But that's the way they would do it in that direction. After World War II, things changed for the Italians. Because so many Italians participate in World War II, so they come back with the GI Bill, so they're able to get a better education. They also come back and are accepted into the Veterans of Foreign Wars. They're accepted into, you know, those fraternal organizations that maybe their fathers were not accepted into. World War II is kind of a leveling for white immigrants, okay? Kind of makes it more of a playing field. We also start to have more Italian professionals come into Columbia County. Columbia Memorial Hospital had a shortage of doctors after the war. And there are several doctors that come from New York City to Hudson because they find out that there's jobs available at Columbia Memorial. And then the final part of that is in the 1970s, there's a feeling in the Italian-American community from people I interviewed that they were losing their language and they were losing their culture. And so they petitioned the city school district to have Italian be the other language. And that's why, to this day, your choice is Spanish or Italian and not French or German at the Hudson City School District. The Land of Eagles. I used to come up with these cute titles. You just see what I do with the kids today. This is basically the story of Eastern Europeans. The first Eastern Europeans to come here were Jewish, and I will talk about the Jewish population in a minute, sort of separately, so I'm just dealing with Christians at this point. They begin to come over in the 1890s, mostly, you know, for economic reasons, and by 1910, we start to see a lot more Polish names and Ukrainian names in the city directories, and that's because the cement factories are up and running. It seems like certain industries would be attracted to certain immigrant groups, and those immigrant groups would hold on, so they would, you know, try and get the jobs for their relatives, and cement tended to be that for Eastern Europeans. And the second part that happened was the Hudson Commerce Department. There was a group that got together like a chamber of commerce to start an industrial park, which is Route 66, where the match factory was. And by 1920, there's a really cool booklet at the Columbia County Historical Society that they were sending to factories in Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx saying, you don't want to be here, it's too expensive for your workers. We'll build you a factory tax-free, which is part of our saga, right? In Greenport. But they called it Hudson. It was like the Greater Hudson Chamber of Commerce. And we do develop several factories out here. And again, this is at the same time as you have this Eastern European immigration in New York City. So they're going to come up to Hudson. And why do they want to come to Hudson? For the same reason immigrants want to come to Hudson today. It's a smaller city. It's a safer city. It's an easier city to raise your family in than if you're staying in Manhattan. Well, in their cases, that would be the Bronx. They create Sacred Heart Church because, once again, Polish people have different holidays, different festivals. They also want their sermons in Polish. So Sacred Heart is over... I think it's Second Street.
Second Street.
It's a beautiful little church. Polish and Ukrainians will split as far as their education with their children is concerned. Some of them will do the public school. Some of them will do the Catholic school. It's kind of split in that respect. The other church is St. Michael's Ukrainian Church.
which before that was St. Mary's Roman Catholic Church, and before that was the Unitarian Church. It was on and on and on. It's been reused a lot. There's like a split in the community that way. And then the third church, which I don't have here, was St. Nicholas's, which now is in Our Lady of Mount Carmel. So are you following the church history? Okay, we're moving around, all right? And the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is St. Michael's, and the Ukrainian Catholic Church is St. Nicholas's. And the Ukrainian Catholic Church is under the Pope, and in the Catholic Church, Ukrainian Orthodox is under the Orthodox Church. So they're sort of similar religions, but different. Now, having said all that about these groups, realize there's tremendous intermarriage between the Irish, the Italians, and the Eastern Europeans. That is what makes Hudson very unique from, let's say, New York or Boston. You don't have a little Italy in Hudson, and you don't have a little Ireland or whatever. It's not that big a town. Okay, everybody's in the first and second wards, and then you might move up to the third ward, but your next door neighbor is an Irish girl, and she's cute, and you're Italian, and the next thing you know, you get married. And it was kind of interesting, because that first generation, the children of the immigrants, 50% of them marry outside of their ethnic group. That's incredibly high if you compare that to Boston. Okay, if you compare it to my own family, my grandparents were born in this country, but they were both Northern Italian and they married Northern Italians. My dad had, there were three kids in my dad's family. None of them married an Italian. But that took to the third generation for that to happen. But in Hudson, it happens with that second generation. And it's because they're going to school together, they're in the streets together, they're fighting each other sometimes for the heck of it. And so there's a lot of that kind of back and forth. But this is just some more of the culture of the Ukrainians. Okay, Jewish culture. Now, you're going to look at this and tell me it's Shiloh Baptist Church. I will tell you, you are correct. However, it was originally a synagogue. So once again, there's one thing about religious buildings in Hudson. They will always find a life, just they'll have to find another religion. The Jewish community really dates back to almost the beginnings of Hudson. There, as early as 1800 and 1805, there is a synagogue on Front Street, and it is a group mostly of Hungarian Jewish people, okay? And they come here, and they start one of the first banks in Hudson. There's that very small community. And then, around the turn of the century, when you start to have the pogroms in Russia, and Jewish people are kicked, you know, having difficulty staying in the Ukraine and Poland, they start to come in large numbers to the United States. And again, they find Hudson. And they don't come to Hudson for any particular industry. They just really pretty much start in New York City and then discover that Hudson is here and come for the same reasons. But the Eastern Europeans are a more conservative Jewish group, okay, than the Hungarians, and now we have this sort of issue. So there is a request for a rabbi to come from Lithuania to form one synagogue. And that was Mr. Franzl. And so he comes over and he starts Ashni Emeth, which is this one, and they build this church synagogue about 1910. In the 1960s, the community of Jewish people has moved more into Greenport, and because they're not, you know, according to their laws, on Sabbath they should walk to synagogue, not drive, so they move the synagogue closer to the people. And again, where are they going? Which direction? Up. Okay? So one of the phrases I first heard when I came here in 1983 is that you would go up street. Up street. So, and I'll say it to my students today, go up street, and they'll all nod their head. You know, so if you go up, but if you walk Warren Street, it is up, because you're going up the cliff from this Hudson River, and if you realize that everybody's starting down on the river and then moving upstream. So it's kind of that same part. Okay. Because I was actually doing different groups, I also did African Americans. African Americans have two different stories in the city of Hudson. The first story is they date all the way back to 1786. A lot of African Americans were sailors, and some of those Nantucket whaling ships had African American sailors on them, so some of them would come here and settle. Some were slaves,
because we have a relatively large slave population in Columbia County, because we have large farms. The Livingstons, the Rensselaers, the Van Alstines all had fairly large slave populations. In 1821, when the last of the slaves are freed in New York State, most African Americans go to urban areas to get work because they need it. In Columbia County, the African Americans in the countryside will get displaced by the Irish immigrants coming in, as far as working in the houses are concerned. So they again will settle in Hudson, and that's the AME Zion Church. Then you also have the influx of African Americans coming in for the brickyard work later in the 19th century, and they will also go to AME Zion. But we also have, note the synagogue slash Shiloh Baptist is back again. We have a second large wave of African Americans immigrating to Hudson, and that is in the 1920s with the Great Migration that occurs all over the North. And again, I was able to interview a couple people, their ancestor or great-grandfather had come in to work the brickyards and had been going home to Virginia, and then one year he sends the money for the wife to come home. Okay. And so that's it. Now, they would be Baptist as far as the religion is concerned. AME Zion is actually a derivative of the Methodist religion. So they create the Shiloh Baptist Church, and in the 60s, they buy the synagogue, which is actually not that uncommon. A lot of Black Baptist churches in some areas are synagogues. And over there is Elena Mosley with the kids that do the African drumming. They have a very vibrant, she's Operation Unite. There's a very vibrant, still to this day, African-American community. It's a huge blending today. It's a much, it's not just people born in America. It's much more immigrant, and which I will get to. By the way, the Eastern Europeans have a second wave, too, and that's in the 1960s. For some reason, Poland started to give visas to allow people out if they had a relative in another part of the world. So there were Polish families here in Hudson who still had people trapped behind the Iron Curtain, and in the 1960s were able to bring them out. It was like this little window of time. It's kind of interesting. So, was Hudson a melting pot? There's two different theories in American social studies today. The state of New York gives us these lovely curriculums. One is the melting pot theory, where we become one culture, the American culture, by blending all these cultures together. There's the other theory called the salad bowl. Do you ever have to teach the salad bowl?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And the salad bowl idea is that there are many different cultures that work together, but they don't blend. They're like individual, but they work together like a salad. So I always present this every year, and then I do kind of a straw poll. What do you guys think? And interestingly enough, most of my kids will vote for the melting pot because they see themselves as listening to each other's music or going into each other's homes or dating each other. So it's kind of interesting. That picture is from 1925. It is a Christmas pageant at the Opera House. And it was actually sponsored by St. Mary's Church. And if you read the names of the kids, there were Polish kids up there and Irish kids up there and Italian kids. So right from the beginning, Hudson has that ability to blend. So this is Hudson today. So what immigrants do we have today? We have a continuing influx of immigrants into Hudson. And it's very varied and comes in for, I mean, I look at them all the time. I'm like, well, why are you here? Because, you know, it still seems like a small town. The first group that we have, and probably the largest group that we're seeing coming in new, is from Bangladesh. And part of the reason for that is Bangladesh is having sinking problems, literally, that the ocean is rising and there's a lot of real severe economic problems in Bangladesh. Most of the people that come here are from the cities of Bangladesh, and some of the students I'm getting are very well versed in English. They go to English language schools and actually write and read a lot better than an American kid. So we have this sort of in combination. A lot of them, they're almost all entrepreneurs. They run the taxi cab companies in town. They buy up some of the stores in town. We have a mosque now.
which is down on 3rd Street. You can't even tell that's what it is. It looks like a house when you drive by. I only know it if I drive by on Friday. Sometimes I see the kids standing outside of it. The second area that a lot of the kids are coming from is the Caribbean in general. And most of those kids are African, you know, are at what we call African American or black, okay? Jamaica and Haiti. The Haitian population increased after all the problems that were, you know, the hurricane in Haiti and a few other things. Those kids who came because of that came because they already had family here in Hudson. I can't really tell you why Haitians came here originally. They seem to come and work in a variety of different areas. Mostly, if you talk to the parents, it's education to a large extent. They understand, the Caribbean people in particular, that education in the United States is far better than what their children could have in the Caribbean. That is a big reason for the Jamaican kids that come. The Jamaican kids usually come because they've already got a relative up here, and then they are, and then their family members come up here because they hear that the education is better. The Caribbean kids, too, can first start off in Florida or Georgia for a couple of years. Maybe their parents start off there, and then they migrate north because they find out that work is better here, or that they can get better housing up here. We always find that some of their educational opportunities in Florida and Mississippi weren't much better than what they had in Haiti, which is one of the problems that we have in Hudson. But this just shows you an example of some of the kids. These are my three of my former students. That's Arifel Karim. He got he's trying to choose right now between Skidmore and RPI. So he's had some pretty good choices. Mackenzie Caldwell, they're both in my mock trial group. So, and they're working together. They're in the National Honor Society. And National Honor Society, we do big meals during Thanksgiving and Christmas, and the kids are doing the grocery shopping. I always think this is really pretty funny because they make the kids go and do the shopping. I mean, the teacher goes with them, but we always think it's kind of funny. These are students. This was after this. People sitting back here, I copied this from the website, are all graduates of Hudson. Antonio Abitabel, who is our acting principal at the moment, oh, and also descends from a long line of Italian. He came to us with this idea. We had a half day that we really wanted to encourage the kids to understand what was waiting for them after they got out of Hudson. So we started remembering which alumni we had who were either seniors in college or had already graduated college, who were doing quite well. And so we called, you know, we tried to figure out who could still get a hold of them because this was the day before Thanksgiving. We had a half-day session the day before Thanksgiving. So that's Muhammad Ghani, and that's Brendan Connor, and I can't really, some of them, those are the two that I had. I didn't have some of the, some of these people were older, like I didn't teach them. They all had really interesting stories to tell. One girl up there had been homeless. She had gotten through Hudson mostly because, you know, a lot of teachers kept their hands on her. She went to Hudson Valley for 2 years and then got a full scholarship to St. Rose, graduated from St. Rose, and is now in graduate school to go into psychology. Muhammad Ghani came here when he was 14, started in Hudson High School knowing no English whatsoever, graduated valedictorian. He's at RPI now. He's a senior at RPI. So we had a variety, and these are just, these are kids in the front, they're junior high students, that they were kids who wanted to meet these kids, and so they brought them down to meet them. This panel spoke to both high school students and junior high to try and encourage them. And these kids up here are what we call the PBIS kids. We have a program on positive behavior, so kids who get to class on time, don't have any referrals, are passing all their classes every quarter. The teachers get to nominate 3 or 4 kids. And they go through and they add up all those kids and they have just so much money for pizza. But then they get to go to the library this one once a month, that one day, and have pizza with the principal and the vice principal. First time we did it, they're like, this is supposed to be a treat? I'm like, yes, you really do want to do this. But they get their name, you know, it's always like, do you really want to be identified as the good kid in the school? It's gotten to the point now that we don't know what to do because we've done it for 3 quarters and we average about 30 to 40 kids. We don't repeat them. We make sure that the same kid doesn't go twice. And we still have kids who aren't getting honored, so we're trying to figure out if they're going to do another fundraiser to see if they can. I think they'll do like a big thing at the end of the year. Maybe they'll get ice cream or something. But if you notice, these kids are from all over. This student here is African, you look at him and say, okay, he's African American, but his family's actually from Haiti. Okay, so our African American community is very, very blended. And then there's some, you can tell some girls that are Islamic and things like that. So we have a variety. We also have several students from China. I've yet to figure out what they all work in the Chinese restaurants. I know that also sounds like a stereotype, but it's actually true. And we've had some kids come in lately from Africa and from Yemen. I don't know why. I haven't had them yet as students, so I'll have to find out why you go from Yemen to Hudson. And these are just more pictures. This is TSL. This is from a few years ago. That boy right there was in eighth grade, and he's a junior. And in my AP class, Oswaldo. So, and this was a library book club that we had for a while. That's me over in the corner. We used to have breakfast and books. I love how they do things early in the morning. That's not my idea of a good time. We'd all read a book. It was teachers as well as students. It was all voluntary, and we'd get together, and we would have breakfast and talk about the book. And it was kind of a way of encouraging. And again, you can see very mixed. So it's all different kind of kids involved in different things, and it's kind of where Hudson is going. And it actually is blending just the way it did before. That's it.